Welcome to Sticky Cues. I'm Adie.
And I'm Tom.
We answer anonymous questions written on sticky notes from our real-life consent education classes.
We'll talk about sex, relationships, consent, and help you to tackle those sticky questions from the young people in your life. G'day, Adie.
Hi.
I am wondering what you've been thinking about this week.
Well, I play a lot of board games. I'm one of those pandemic board gamers. I came to it in the pandemic when we had too much time and went down a rabbit hole, and now I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars on board games. But what I was going to say is I think my math skill has improved. I think
from
I can.
Playing board
yeah,
games.
From adding up scores. And just like doing the score check and being like, oh, 11 plus 6. And I can just do that now. And maybe it's because you have the visual of seeing the number. But this is a big step for me. I've been allergic to math for a lot of years.
You heard it here first, folks. Major changes to our curriculum in schools. It's board games only for maths.
Oh, I could get on that soapbox.
I reckon you could probably actually do a lot of good switching board games out
I think
for
so too.
Classes.
Anyway, would you like your question?
Yes, let's do this.
Bit of a serious question.
Okay.
If you accidentally assaulted someone, how do you help?
So to begin this one, it would be useful, I think, to explain what we mean by assault.
Yeah, this question's coming out of a class where we have talked about that.
Yeah. So the way that we would define assault, sexual assault specifically for a classroom, is any kind of physical contact of a sexual nature that somebody does not want. So if someone has interacted with your body involving private parts, or it's done with intention to for somebody else's sexual pleasure or to try and stimulate your own sexual pleasure, and you have not asked for it, you don't want it, sexual assault. Just by way of definition or for clarity, sexual harassment is any kind of contact, verbal, texting, calls, catcalls, memes, etc.
And these are really simple definitions that we use basically to explain that any kind of unwanted sexual contact is not okay, because we don't want to get tied up in the legal definitions of what is harassment, what is assault. So coming out of that conversation, a young person has asked us, if you accidentally assaulted someone, how do you help?
The first thing that I would be saying to them is listening. If you have been, say you've hooked up with someone or you've been in a relationship and you've realized or they've explained to you, actually, I didn't want that to happen, and your brain goes, that is sexual assault. My first advice would be, let the person who is the victim in this scenario dictate what it is that they would like to happen, because they are the ones that are in charge of their own healing journey. And if you want to be helpful, hear what it is that they need or what they want and go with that. That's kind of like, you could answer that and it kind of be done. Practical answers or avenues for help, there are things like SAS, the Sexual Assault Support Services, who we both work for. We offer therapy and counselling for victim survivors of sexual harm. So you could contact us. We could give some advice specifically about the situation. One of our counsellors could help out there. Other than that, my brain just comes back to, let the person who has been harmed or hurt dictate what the process is.
I think that's a great answer. Just let them lead the way. And if that doesn't involve you, that's okay.
Yeah. And that could be worth deep diving into. What do you reckon?
Sounds like a plan. That's our short answer. For some more context, stay tuned.
What does that evoke for you, that idea of if that doesn't involve you?
I think that would be the hardest thing for someone. And it's really... I think this question is coming from a really great place.
Yeah.
This person, I think, has identified that their behaviors or their actions has been interpreted in a way that they didn't intend, and that has had harm on someone. And that's really great that they've identified that and are now asking this question. And it would be really challenging coming from a place of, what do I do now, to be told, you don't do anything. This doesn't involve you. And that is possible. And I would hazard a guess at likely, actually.
Yeah. It's more likely to occur than I think people expect.
Yeah. So what they can do is reflect on that and change behavior in the future.
Mm. Go seek out support and help yourself.
Like figure out what it was that happened that you participated in that meant that that resulted in that person feeling harmed in that way, and try to change your behavior around that. So ask more questions, think about things differently, try different things, check in with the person more. And I guess it would be helpful if the survivor of that harm felt comfortable to have that conversation with the person who accidentally assaulted them. But that is not on them to do that, and we definitely shouldn't expect survivors to participate in any sort of process like that.
Which is why we say it may not involve you.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to help out, it might be that the best thing you can do is disconnect and not be present.
And debrief with other people,
trusted,
preferably professionals. Yeah. But yeah, I think that answer is great, like letting the person who feels assaulted lead with that.
Mm.
And we're sort of hedging very carefully around our language here. And I think some listeners will be thinking about, well, accidentally assaulted, hang on a second, like isn't any assault coming with intention? And I think it would be really great to clarify a little bit more context about where this question has come from if you wanted to speak to what we're talking about in classrooms with teenagers.
Yeah, so I think what it is that you're getting at is that whole idea of the difference between intention and outcome. Young people have intentions that are okay. They're wanting to get intimate with someone, or they're wanting to hook up, or they're sexually attracted and they're wanting to express that with a partner. But their ability to do consenting conversations really well and find out what is safe and where boundaries are, that bit is not as well developed, or they're not as comfortable with
that.
Or
entirely lacking.
Yeah,
because it's just absent. Well, they're working off the role models that they see that we have in film and television, which is like two people look at each other across a bar, have a vibe, and then they're sucking each other's faces off.
Exactly.
And so these are the social scripts that we participate in and all kids have to go off. When we're talking about young people, they are emulating what they see in the world, and no one is showing them how to have those consenting conversations early and often, because if the first time they're thinking about consent is when they want to be sexual with someone, that is way too late.
Yeah.
It's a practice skill that they need to be doing amongst their peer group constantly, so that when it comes to sexual intimacy, it's not awkward and uncomfortable. It's actually a red flag if someone's not asking those questions and checking in. And this is how assault is happening, is, two young people that really like each other. They want to hook up. They're maybe even choosing to hook up and choosing to be in relationships with each other, but the communication is falling down. So someone, ends up feeling harmed. Someone does some harm without intending to, and we get in this situation. So this question, I think, has come out of these conversations that we've had.
And I think it's really helpful to think about this. Well, for me, it's been really helpful to think about it practically. If I was really interested in someone and I've really wanted to do some kind of sexual act with them, and all I've ever seen in porn, all I've ever chatted about with my mates is that, oh, you just do X, Y, Z. Like it just kind of happens, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Here's the end result you're looking for. Mm. And then I'm with that sexual partner and I just start doing it, assuming that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like best of intentions. Everyone previously up to this point was really into it. We're all like happy and the body language is great. And then I decide to do something new or step over into a new boundary and I've not checked in. Even though my intention may not have been to cause harm, the chances of that causing harm skyrocket.
Yep.
I've not checked in for it to be safe for them, whether they've had previous experiences, they don't want to go anywhere near that particular kind of sexual act.
Yeah, have no idea. And what you were saying about pornography as well, pornography is particularly insidious because it not only does it not role model consent, it actually shows people enjoying pain as part
of role models the opposite.
Exactly.
Of consent.
Exactly. Yeah. So young people who have watched online pornography specifically will have this idea that pain is a normal part of that, and that girls and women in particular like that as part of a sexual experience.
One thing, just to go down that little rabbit hole,
which is true for some people, not everybody.
Well, and that's kind of the point. I feel like the response I get, particularly from young people when I bring this up, is the little cohort that go, no, actually we do like that. Or they seem to perform this no, I am actually that sexually experienced that I enjoy the pain. I like it rough. I like it harder.
Yeah.
As though that is some kind of social currency. Mm. And I don't feel like it's fair for me to directly question them on that because it's their experience
and that's what they're communicating.
It starts to feel a little bit unsafe. Like I'm going into very personal territory there that is not my business.
Mm.
But there does seem to be this little social currency around, no, I'm so sexually experienced that I do actually like the painful stuff that porn shows. And that is what I want.
Yeah. But like, I think this also ties into the social script of like women and girls are not the instigators. Men are the instigators. Mm. And girls are supposed to be the pursued and they're supposed to play coy and refuse and say no a few times so that they don't look easy.
Mm.
And like this just continues into sexual experiences where people are not shown how to check in and for that to be sexy and flirty and playful and fun. Yeah. And part of a pleasurable sexual experience. And so they're just left guessing and doing things to try and see if that's fine. And also not coming from a place of like, I want this person to have a really great, fun, pleasurable experience.
Mm.
We know from a lot of research that the bars are very different for women and men in heterosexual relationships. And so the expectation for boys and men is that they will come and that is sort of the end of the sexual experience or the goal. And then female pleasure doesn't really play into that. And so the expectation for women and girls is like his pleasure. And again, I'm speaking very heteronormatively here, but I think I certainly growing up in this world, my pleasure wasn't even on the table. Like that wasn't a reason why you would have sex with someone. Sex was something that you did once you were in a relationship with someone because that was what you did. Like there was no mental process or no mental connection for me where I was like, you have sex for pleasure.
Mm.
It was like you find a partner, you get married, you have sex to have children.
Mm.
And the unspoken stuff of what all my friends were talking about was like they were the naughty kids and they were the cool kids that were hooking up and having those sexual experiences. And so like that purity culture of sex is dirty and shameful.
And this feels like a nice tie into what you said earlier about if you do want to help after you recognize you've assaulted or hurt somebody, check in with these kinds of stereotypes we've been talking about.
For sure. I think if I had been in a situation like that as a young person, I would have felt very complicit in being assaulted.
Mm, like it was partially your fault.
For sure, because I would have adhered to the social script.
Mm.
I would have said, no, I don't want to go out with you. Oh, stop it. You're so annoying. Like all of that stuff that you're supposed to say. And so at what point are you ever supposed to be able to turn around and say like, oh, I'm really enjoying your attention because then you're not playing hard to get. So then boys won't be interested in you.
Mm.
So it's a no-win situation. And the bigger answer to this question is we just have to get better at talking about consent and our feelings and being genuine and open and honest about those things and normalizing those kinds of conversations.
And normalizing the experience that you might and probably will feel awkward trying to do good consenting conversations the first time.
Yeah, because no one's shown you.
Yeah, and if you are having those consenting conversations for the first time as you're about to get sexually intimate, we would say that's too late, but we know that that's the experience of a lot of people. You're probably going to feel awkward there. And that is okay. And hopefully you are experiencing that intimacy with someone who is also okay with that and recognizes it's a super normal human feeling, and establishing that trust, even though there might be a bit of awkwardness, sets you up for a far better experience. If you really do want to enjoy the things you actually like, the best place to do that is in an environment where you trust the other human being or other human beings that you're with. And that accounts for everything, not just sex.
Mm.
Friendships, relationships, work, colleagues, sporting teams. When you've got trust amongst the people that you're experiencing life with, you open yourself up to relax more, your nervous system relaxes, you're enjoying everything more. And that is fundamentally what consent is about, is building that trust and safety.
This is just such a phenomenal question.
Like kudos to the person, because I think, do you want to tell the story about getting this question?
I don't know if I remember it exactly. I definitely have included it in this podcast because it's rare.
Mm.
I don't remember another occasion. I do remember one other occasion where we received a similar sort of thing. A lot of the work that we do is very survivor focused, I would say.
Mm.
We are in general talking about healthy, happy, positive relationships, but we are coming from a lens of preventing sexual harm because it is really hard to talk about the perpetration of violence. It's very polarizing. It's very dangerous ground to step on in the world of the internet, but that's where the work needs to be done. And we know that sexual assault is a gendered crime because of a lot of these social scripts. It's called a gendered crime because predominantly the perpetrators are male, and gender stereotypes are one of the biggest drivers of sexual harm.
Mm.
So for someone to have, especially at this age, because this person is under 16 years of age, definitely, we know they must be. So to have that level of introspection and to have a safe enough space to look inside themselves and go, I think I've been part of causing harm and I want to do something positive about it is just, I can't overstate how amazing this question is. I'm pretty curious to hear your opinion on just being a cishet white guy in an age where toxic masculinity is such a buzzword. And like, do you feel like you're vocal in this space in our workplace and the work that we do. So do you ever feel like you shouldn't be talking about this stuff or?
Yeah, definitely. It changes depending on my circles, obviously. But the first thing that came to mind was this idea that if I admit to what I've done and I kind of buy into the whole toxic masculinity conversation, I have betrayed straight white guys.
Interesting.
There is definitely this feeling among some, you know, close male friends and family, when I start talking about this, there is this very palpable feeling of you've gone over to the other side. You've admitted defeat and you've subjugated yourself to a worldview, a mindset that is, you're pathetic, basically.
This binary of...
Yeah. It's either us or them.
Yeah, like gaining control again.
And look, that was real for a long time and it still is. I still feel the push and the pressure of that. But what guides me through that is the best men I have ever come across have been ones who are willing to admit when they have mucked up and when they've caused harm and are within their power, if you will, going still, going quiet, reflecting, and then making changes. They're not the ones that are blustering and keeping up the image of being strong and in control and all of a sudden taking charge and calling the shots. They can still do that when the time requires and when that's their place to do it, but in having caused harm, they acknowledge it, they reflect, and they come back with this kind of powerful gentleness. And I just think that is something that I would like to spend time around rather than someone who is so worried about admitting that they've caused harm and the kind of the social loss that comes with that. They're willing to put up with that because there is a higher calling, if you will, to get a little bit religious with
language. There's such a strength in doing that.
Yeah, isn't there? And you recognize that it doesn't matter about gender or sex, but when people, particularly in positions of power, honestly and genuinely reflect and say, yep, I'm going to wear this, everyone goes, whew, I can trust that person.
Yeah, most people do. Unfortunately, politically, it's looked at as like flip-flopping. And
that's it, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's another place we have behavior role modeled, isn't it? One thing that we didn't say is an example of what that person could say to the person who feels harmed, which is that the person who asked this question could, if they sense that the person they harmed feels comfortable, go and have a chat to them and just say things like, I'm really sorry that you feel that way. Is there anything I can do for you? So it's really important not to discount their experience and say that they're lying or you don't believe them, because two people can experience exactly the same thing completely differently. Yeah. So acknowledging that it wasn't my intention and I'm sorry that your experience came out that way. Yeah, is there anything that you want from me right now? Is there anything I can do for you right now? I'm really sorry about that. And just coming to the table, not forcing anything, just letting them know that you're available, if that's something you're up for as well.
Mm. I like that idea of checking in, you know, do you want me to be a part of this? You know, I'm sorry that that's happened.
Yeah.
That wasn't my intention, but obviously this has hurt you and I'm really sorry.
Mm.
Do you want me here? Do you need space?
I imagine that in itself could be really healing for the survivor as well.
Yeah,
to be like, oh, they're not ignoring me. They're not
shaming me for it. They're
yeah,
not saying it's my fault.
Exactly. They're not going around and talking about me behind my back. So that could be a really great thing.
And also speaking to the fact that there is no easy or elegant way to have this conversation.
Yeah.
It's going
really
to be rough. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be tense. Emotions may be really high. Our nervous system is probably through the roof.
Yeah. Probably feeling really attacked if they've heard that someone they've been intimate with has said they've been assaulted. That I imagine would feel really awful.
Yeah. So I'd be fully encouraging the asker of this question to give yourself space.
Yeah.
To be feeling all the things you're feeling as well.
Yeah.
It's awesome you've recognized the harm you've caused. That really is the most critical thing to be looking at the moment, but leave some space for yourself. Look after yourself. It's amazing that you've acknowledged this. It's going to bring up feelings. You're not a bad person. You have caused harm.
Mm.
That does not mean you're a bad person.
This is a disclosure.
Yeah. I'd not thought of that.
Yeah, it just came to me then.
Mm.
Yeah. Often we're receiving disclosures of harm, people saying that they've experienced something, but this is also a disclosure. And in the same way, it's important to receive that and validate it and not bring shame to the table.
Man, that's cool. That is, I've never thought about approaching, because we have a very particular kind of conversation when it comes to disclosures. There's a few key things we're trying to do: listen, believe, validate, you know, support them. And I'd never thought about applying that to someone who was the perpetrator.
Mm.
There's something quite lovely in that, actually. There's someone that's unintentionally caused harm, but they've acknowledged it and they're seeking to do the right thing. Yeah, I really like that.
Mm. So, Tom, would you say that this is a green, an amber, or a red flag question?
I can't tell if it would be between amber and red or between green and amber. It's either of those two. So I'll say an amber flag. Predominantly because I can see how a young person might hear what we've been saying and go, okay, well, if I was on the flip side of this, what do I do? As just like a mind experiment or a thought experiment. However, my gut feeling is that someone has asked this off the back of them
reflecting.
So in that situation, my mind goes, is there the other person that needs support, and are they present? Do I need to be like getting teachers worded up about accessing support or making referrals? But it's a green flag for me in the light of this is such a wonderful question to ask. And I think such an important conversation to be having more of. So I'm really, really grateful it's part of the mix.
Yeah, I was going to add like maybe a little party flag on the bottom for that.
Yeah, a party flag. I like that.
Yeah. Yes. With all sensitivity to moving forward in this journey. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please pass it on. Consent education is best when it's open and often. This podcast can be a great jumping off point. It really helps if you give us a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. To see more questions that we've answered, you can follow us on Instagram at @sticky_QS.
Sticky Cues is hosted and produced by Tom Duff and Adi Delaney. Further support from the Tasmanian Sexual Assault Support Service, editing, sound design, and original composition by Gareth Dawson, graphic design by Fatago.